Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you see and hear us okay, I take it?
I can.
Okay, thank you.
Should I change my name here to who I represent?
No, you're fine. Thank you.
Okay.
Morning, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good
Can
morning.
you see us and hear me okay?
I can, Your Honor. Can you hear me and see me?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, I'll call court to order. This is the Fifth District Court of Appeals hearing oral argument this morning via remote Zoom. I'm Judge William Hoffman. I'll be presiding over the panel today. Joining me on the panel are my colleagues, Judge Craig Baldwin and Judge Robert Montgomery. The matter we are hearing today is Delaware County Appeal Number 23-28, John Doe et al., John Doe 1 et al. Versus City of Columbus et al. Counsel, I will advise you, we've read the briefs in preparation for the argument today. Per our local rule, each side is allotted 15 minutes. On behalf of the appellant, if you wish to reserve rebuttal time, you may do so, but you need to let me know how much time you intend to reserve at the start of the argument. So I will try to keep us on track. I will also tell you that I usually will stop whoever is speaking before their time has expired to make sure the judges, if we have any questions, we can ask them. Although, if you've practiced in front of us before, you know we are likely to ask questions at any time. With that being said, unless there are any questions or preliminary matters, counsel for the appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Rich Coglanese on behalf of the defendant appellants, City of Columbus et al. I would ask to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please, Your
Okay,
Honor.
you may proceed.
Thank you. Your Honors, this is a very straightforward and simple appeal. Three questions can be asked, three questions can be answered. First question: can fictitious plaintiffs file suit without revealing their identity to the court, to the defendant, or to anyone? The answer to that question is no. Can people who are not affected by a law challenge it? The answer to that question is no. Finally, can a newly added party who joins litigation after a preliminary injunction hearing, after the defendants have had an opportunity to quest to be participating in that hearing, can a new plaintiff join who changes the facts of the case, file an affidavit, not be subject to any type of cross-examination, and then use that as a basis to enjoin law? The answer to that question is also no. With these three no's, Your Honors, we have a very simple and straightforward reversal of the Common Pleas Court.
Well, when you say that, I can't help but note that if it's such a simple question, I know your brief cites over 50 cases for us to analyze. It doesn't seem quite as simple as perhaps you make it out to be.
Your Honor, the reason that we've cited so many cases are there are a lot of
That's
underlying
just a
issues to
comment.
that.
Go on to your argument.
No,
Please.
absolutely. There are additional arguments to be made. I'm simply trying to boil this down to basics and give the court a roadmap through to analyze the case. But through all of these cases, we can find, as the court in Ellison said, in Texas, no court in the country has ever allowed a fictitious plaintiff, unknown to the court, unknown to the defendants, to bring litigation. We have ways to protect people's identities. They can file.
Okay, let me stop you there, because you know, you have, I guess, by repeating the phrase often, I guess there's a psychological twist that we will adopt it. You continually use the word fictitious. The trial court specifically uses ambiguous or
anonymous, Your Honor,
or as a pseudonym. Your characterization of fictitious is troublesome to me. Explain why it's fictitious versus anonymous.
Well,
and
Your
is
Honor,
there a difference?
There is, Your Honor. And I think the Ellison Court actually did a very good job of explaining the difference. An anonymous plaintiff, a plaintiff filing under a pseudonym, is somebody who files a complaint with their actual name under seal. They file an affidavit with their actual name under seal. There can be protective orders, if necessary, so that the parties understand who the actual real party in interest is. That is a anonymous plaintiff. That is what the court talked about, the Ohio Supreme Court talked about in the Cincinnati Inquirer case, where the policeman who attempted to file litigation used initials, but filed a full affidavit with his name and address under seal, so the court and the parties understood who it was. We don't have any of that in this case. What we have in this case is, as the Allison court said, fictitious plaintiffs, plaintiffs who are completely unknown. They may live in Delaware. They may not live in Delaware. They may have signed those affidavits. They may not have signed those affidavits. We don't know any of this, Your Honor. And this is especially true in situations where we are simply relying on someone to say, trust me, everything these plaintiffs said is in fact correct.
Yeah, but let me just stop you right there. Why don't we just for a minute pretend that the people that are the plaintiffs in this case are not fictitious? They actually are real people. Isn't the issue whether or not the ordinances that the city of Columbus passed are constitutional or not, or do they violate revised code 9.68? I think it kind of hurts your argument to spend a lot of time on this issue of whether or not they're fictitious or anonymous. I think it just, to me, there has been cases before, have there not, that people did file under anonymous situations. I mean, the city attorney's office is your office, is it not, the office that would prosecute individuals that if they came forward and said they own something that would be in violation of the law, isn't it your office that would prosecute the very same people that want to remain anonymous?
They would prosecute, Your Honor, but...
But isn't that a reason why they would want to be anonymous?
Your Honor, there are ways...
Fear of being prosecution. I mean, I understand your argument, but I think it almost, to me, I feel I want to get to the point is whether or not the city of Columbus passed ordinances that are unconstitutional or not, or in violation of the state legislatures. I believe it's revised code 9.68, and to spend a lot of time on the difference between fictitious and anonymous and whether or not the trial court judge properly or improperly allowed them to be anonymous. I'm just as Judge Hoffman said, I'm a little bit troubled by the fictitious nature. You know, you look at the difference between fictitious and anonymous. There is a difference between that, but if you just assume for a minute, why don't we do this? Why don't we assume that the people aren't fictitious or not anonymous? Let's assume they came forward and said, I'm John Johnson, and I own a magazine that's got 35 round capability or capacity, and I'm coming forward, and you know exactly who they are, then what?
Well, Your Honor, a couple of things. First of which is,
how'd that change your argument as to whether or not it's constitutional? Now you know who they are, and let's go.
So, the problem, though, with getting to that step is we've skipped a few. First of which is whether or not there's Article IV jurisdiction in the court. Second of which is there actual standing in the court? And as this court can do, take a look at Ohioans for Concealed Carry, where when they sued the city of Columbus over our weapons under disability ordinance, the gun rights group said, we file gun litigation all the time. We have standing to bring this case. The 10th District said, no, you don't have standing in this particular case. So before we actually address the merits of the claim, we have to check the box. Does Article 4 apply, or is this going to be an advisory opinion? And two, does standing apply? As it relates, for example, to the safe storage provision in the Columbus Ordinance, the original plaintiffs who were in this case at the time of the PI hearing, not a single one of them made any allegation about the manner in which they stored guns. No standing. The plaintiff attempted to fix that several weeks after the PI hearing by adding somebody who then said, oh, by the way, I might keep my guns in a way, I have minors in my house, and I might keep my guns in a way that might be impacted by the law. Still no standing under the Ohioans for Concealed Carry test. But even if we look at that, for example, under 968, the Columbus statute is fine because this is a facial challenge, Your Honors. That means the plaintiff has an obligation to show that our safe storage law is unconstitutional and can never violates 968 and can never properly be applied under 968.
Okay, let me stop you there because I've read so much information in these briefs, it gets hard for me to keep it straight. I thought I read from Appellee that the Supreme Court has already ruled on the issue of the constitutionality of 9.68. Is that accurate or not?
In Cleveland, the court in 2010 said 968 was constitutional. At the time,
Has that been changed?
well, yes, in a way, Your Honor. At the time these ordinances were passed,
Are you talking about Cleveland, the Arnold case?
no.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. At the time these ordinances were passed, the city of Columbus has two separate ch constitutional challenges on 968 pending in the Franklin County Court of Common Pleas. When the city passed these specific ordinances, 968 was found to be unconstitutional by the Franklin County Common Pleas Court. It issued a preliminary injunction against 968. The 10th District ended up remanding the case, not disagreeing with the law as interpreted by the Franklin County Common Pleas Court, simply saying the court took too long to issue its PI opinion and the evidence that we presented at that point was stale. But they did not
PI,
refute.
help me. I don't know what PI, what's it mean?
Apologize, Your Honor, preliminary injunction.
Thank you.
So the Franklin County Common Pleas Court had actually found that based on the changes in the law post-Cleveland, that ruling was no longer good.
So what did Cleveland say? Is that Supreme Court?
That is a Supreme
Did they
Court case.
address the issue specifically?
In Cleveland, the court said 968 was constitutional under Home Rule. Since that point, we have filed two challenges, one in 2019.
Okay, I understand that. And this may be another case of stepping ground, but the answer to my question, the short and simple answer, is the Supreme Court in Cleveland has said it is constitutional.
It did, yes.
Okay, go ahead then, move forward.
One of the challenges, however, here is not looking at the constitutionality of 968. That is, in fact, not before the Common Pleas Court. 968 says that a municipality cannot pass gun laws that are different than state or federal gun laws. There was testimony in this case, for example, Your Honor, that the child endangerment laws in the state of Ohio do require guns to be stored in a manner in which minors cannot access them if the person is the parent or in loco parentis. Therefore, the Columbus Safe Storage Ordinance has at least some correct applications under 968, namely, when a parent leaves a gun out. In fact, we have successfully prosecuted someone. I know my
Okay,
time is up,
I
Your
hear
Honor.
the language, the different. I don't understand why the words in loco parentis, how that impacts whether or not it's preempted or not.
Because, Your Honor,
Explain that to me.
Yes, this is a facial challenge to the city's ordinances. As the court is aware, for an ordinance or a statute to be unconstitutional on a facial challenge, there can be no application for that ordinance or that statute to be applied constitutionally. Because child endangerment laws in Ohio do require that guns be kept away from one's children, children cannot access those guns if the person is that child's parent or serving in loco parentis, so a babysitter situation.
So your city ordinance expands that.
It does.
And says you know, the potential, I don't want to say victims or whatever, the person protected, sought to be protected, doesn't have to be in loco parentis to the gun.
That's correct.
So it affords additional protection.
It does.
How does that exempt, or why is it then permissible?
Because this is a facial challenge to our ordinance.
Okay.
And as long as we have some grounds that the ordinance is in sync with state law, they cannot succeed on a facial challenge. They would need to do an as-applied challenge, Your Honor.
Okay, let me suggest you, and with my colleague's permission, because of the issues involved in this case, it'd be my suggestion we allot a little extra time because we take up questions. If
I'm good with that, Judge.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
You know, because we're already exceeded your initial time. I personally would like to hear about jurisdiction priority rule. And I'll be honest with you, I read through the briefs. I'm so confused as to, I'm getting Fairfield County, the Delaware County, the Franklin County, and which was first and last, but I don't understand that argument. And I know there's an assertion that's res judicata, and I don't understand that. So if you don't mind trying to help me understand that better.
Absolutely, Your Honor. So I think it'd be easiest if I first go through the order that the cases got filed and then apply the law to that. The first case that was filed, Your Honor, was our challenge in Franklin County against 968. That was filed in 2019. We sued saying that 968 is unconstitutional based on some Supreme Court holdings as it related to red light traffic cameras that came out in 2017. That was the case that Franklin County Common Pleas that I had referenced earlier had found that, in fact, it was unconstitutional. And granted,
what it was unconstitutional?
968 was unconstitutional.
Okay.
So that's when we passed.
We know now the court's wrong in that.
What's that, Your Honor? I apologize.
We know now the court was wrong in that.
The court was based, was doing.
Cleveland said it's constitutional. Okay. Never mind. Keep moving. Yeah.
They said the evidence was stale. They didn't disagree with the legal reasoning. After that, we passed these ordinances. We got sued in the Fairfield County Common Pleas Court. The challenge there was to the large capacity magazine ban and safe storage. The Fairfield County Common Pleas Court said, 968 is an issue pending in Franklin County. I'm not going to address that jurisdictional priority rule. I have no ability to hear that case. It did say, however, that there was not an Article 1, Section 4 claim on Columbus's ordinances that were pending in Franklin County. So it kept jurisdiction on that. We did a preliminary injunction hearing in front of the judge. The judge ruled in our favor. It was only after that ruling that the plaintiffs then ran to Delaware County. The parties in Franklin County and in Fairfield County are the city and the state. After those rulings, The
Well, the
plaintiffs.
parties aren't the city and the state only, are they, counselor? I mean, it's the parties that filed in the state, correct? Are you saying that the parties that filed in Fairfield County are the same anonymous or fictitious, whatever you call it, parties in Delaware County?
No, it was the state of Ohio that was the plaintiff in Fairfield County.
Oh, okay.
And those
Okay,
parties, the
let me
Fairfield.
stop you. What happened in, okay, Fairfield County, you win, right?
We win.
Is there an appeal?
There was. The state
And what
appealed to
did
this
we
court.
say?
The morning before the argument, the state dismissed their appeal.
Okay. Gotcha.
They then dismissed their, they then eventually dismissed their case. However, that case was still pending when this case was brought. And in answer to the question that I believe Judge Montgomery raised, yes, the parties were slightly different. In Fairfield County, it was the state and the city. In Franklin County, it was the state and the city. In Delaware County, it is the John Does and the city. However, for purposes of jurisdictional priority, the parties do not have to be identical.
No, they have to be substantially similar. What does that mean? Is that talking about issues or the actual people?
Both, Your Honor. It is talking about both. Because as we point out
And there's
in.
no doubt there's a common issue. I don't have any problem with that. But the jurisdictional priority rule talks about substantially the same parties. And from what I'm now hearing you explain to me, there were no individual plaintiffs in the Fairfield County case. Is that accurate?
There were no individual plaintiffs in the Fairfield County case. That is accurate, Your Honor.
Well, how can there be similar, substantially similar parties if these parties, the plaintiffs here in the John Does, have never been taken part or initiated a complaint?
The parties are substantially similar and their interests are identical. In fact, as
I concede their interests may well be identical. So you're saying that carries the burden.
I am. It is
Okay.
much like, Your Honor, it is much like dealing with collateral estoppel issues. And I know those things become very difficult at times. However, it does not, in a collateral estoppel case, as we point out in our brief, it does not require exact identity, exact same identities.
Okay, so your position is okay. I understand your position. Whether or not we agree with it or not, we will flush out. We are actually at almost 20 minutes. I'm going to give you 2 more minutes to wrap up. But before I do, Judge Baldwin, do you have any questions at this
I
point?
do not. Thank you.
Judge Montgomery.
Just one clarification. So the parties that were filing in Fairfield County and the prior Franklin County case, those parties were actually the state and the city, and then the parties that filed up in Delaware County were individuals.
Yes, Your
So
Honor.
you don't, so the parties aren't the same at all. I mean, how are they? I guess that's where I'm lost. How are they substantially the same if you've got totally different parties? You've got anonymous people in the one that are actual plaintiffs, and then the other one is the state. You're saying that under the jurisdictional priority rule that's good enough because the issue is the same, even if the parties are different, technically?
Yes, Your Honor, I am saying
Okay.
that, especially in light of we submitted in the trial court the evidence that the attorney general was working with private parties when he lost the Franklin County case to try to bring this case elsewhere. So yes, that's where we are coming from on this. And
Okay.
the plaintiff's lawyer had mentioned that they filed in Delaware County because the state had lost in Fairfield County. So that's where we're coming from with that.
Oh, okay, I'm going to give you 2 more minutes, which will put you at 23. I'm still going to give you your 3-minute rebuttal, and I'll give Appley 26. So you got 2 minutes in this opening session.
Thank you, Your Honor. The other problem with the case is very, very simple. The only person who even attempted to talk about the manner in which firearms were stored in a residence was not a plaintiff in this case at the time of the preliminary injunction hearing. We had no ability to challenge anything as it related to that plaintiff. That was the only plaintiff who arguably had any interest in storage. Had that plaintiff been part of the case at the time, we could have established a record as it relates to the manner in which firearms were stored, who was in the house, or anything else. But what we have now is simply opposition on philosophical ground to what the city of Columbus has done. The Supreme Court in Ohioans for Concealed Carry said that's not sufficient to be able to bring claims under 968.
Okay, because I got to wrap this up. You're challenging the sufficiency of John Doe 5 as to the storage issue. I understand that, and you didn't have a right to develop that because you can't depose him or send interrogatories or ever because you know who it is. What about as to the magazine limitation? Do you contest that his affidavit is sufficient to raise that challenge or not?
Your Honor, I'm not sure. And the reason I'm not sure is because I don't know the identity of these people, so I don't know if any of them can legally carry guns.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to cut you off here. We understand any other arguments that are in the brief we consider. We're just not going to discuss them now at this point. Okay. On behalf of Appley, you have 26 minutes. You don't have to use it all.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is David Tryon. I represent the John Does and Jane Doe plaintiffs and appellees in this case. In our view, this is an easy case, and because I know you heard that on the other side. But the reason I say
it should be a very short opinion.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. So this case is an appeal of the trial court's preliminary injunction. The opinion covered several, responded to the court's lower court's opinion, responded to several motions that had been filed with the court, but the only one that is both final and appealable and that has been appealed is the preliminary injunction motion. The other issues as to anonymity and to jurisdictional priority, those were not part of the notice of appeal and those are not final appealable orders. But as to the preliminary injunction, the appellees acknowledge that this court must uphold the lower court.
Say that again, because I did not read the notice of appeal. You're telling us that the notice of appeal only challenged, it did not challenge the anonymity ruling?
Right. So there were several
didn't that
motions
come out in the same entry as Judge Gormley's entry, which was 30 pages, which is exactly our limit for our pages for brief. So, but he addresses those issues in his judgment entry. If this is the entry being appealed from, I assume the notice of appeal identified this entry.
Well, it says probable issues for review, whether the trial court erred with, it says with, it should say with, when it issued a preliminary injunction. It doesn't say whether the trial court erred or erred when it issued, when it denied the motion to dismiss or when it granted the plaintiff's motion for, the plaintiff's motion for leave to proceed pseudonymously. Neither one of those two, the motion that was granted to proceed pseudonymously, that was granted, but that is not a final appealable order. Same thing with the motion to dismiss, which was denied, that's not a final appealable order. Only the motion for preliminary injunction, whether granted or denied, could possibly be a final appealable order.
Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you. So the appellants acknowledge that this court must affirm the lower court's preliminary injunction enjoining the enforcement of the Columbus Ordinance, unless the appellants can show that the Common Pleas Court abused its discretion. Indeed, the Ohio Supreme Court has said, quote, the grant or denial of an injunction is solely within the trial court's discretion, and therefore a reviewing court should not disturb the judgment of the trial court absent a showing of a clear abuse of discretion. That's Garona versus State, 37 Ohio State 3rd, 171, 1988. The appellants have not satisfied the burden on this.
One more. It's in your brief, I assume. What's the case name again?
Garono versus State. I'm not certain if that's in the brief. It's 37 Ohio
well,
State.
Okay, that's a problem. You can't argue stuff that's not in your brief on the morning. If you didn't file a supplemental authority, I can't consider. Okay. We can't consider it.
Okay.
Find it on our own, but don't argue cases that are not in your brief.
Okay. Well, I would just, I think it's clear that the that the standard, they've admitted the standard is, and we all agree that the standard is abuse of discretion. And the appellants have not satisfied that burden. The trial court balanced, so let me see, in our brief, we cite for that proposition. Avery Dennison Corp versus Transact Techs. So that's in the brief. So the likelihood of success on the merits is it's likelihood of success in the merits, irreparable harm to the plaintiffs, absent a stay, what injury to others will be caused by the granting of the injunction, and whether the public interest will be served by the granting of the injunction. Now, the trial court's order was tailored to the specific situation here. It maintained the status quo as it existed before the city enacted this unlawful order, unlawful ordinance. It did so in order to protect the residents of the city from threatened arrest and prosecution and jail time and fines. Let's look at the likelihood of success. The appellants claim that the trial court was wrong on the legality of the city's ordinance. There's a short way and a long way to show that the ordinance was illegal and improper. The short way is that the ordinance is invalid under 9.68. The long way is under Article 1, Section 4 of the Ohio Constitution. I'll focus on the short way. The short way is that the Ohio Supreme Court has held not once, but twice, that 9.68 is a constitutional preemption of municipal authority to regulate firearms. The court said what it meant, and it meant what it said, and it said, quote, "We hold that revised code 9.68 is a general law that displaces municipal firearms ordinances and does not unconstitutionally infringe on municipal home rule authority." That's Cleveland versus State, 2010. Previously, in Ohioans for Concealed Carry versus Clyde, 2008, the court said the same thing. Again, in 2017, in Dayton versus Ohio, a third time, the court referenced with approval the constitutionality of 9.68. Citing Ohioans for Concealed Carry. In Cincinnati versus State, a 2024 case, Cincinnati challenged the constitutionality of 9.68.
You know, let's move on because we understand that your point. We don't have to cite all those cases.
Okay. So if I could just mention, so the appellant's claim of why 9.68 is unconstitutional is based on a common pleas decision in Franklin County, which was subsequently reversed. Regardless of what the issue was, that case, that order has been reversed. So the second issue, second element is irreparable harm. I do want to make one point, though, on 9.68 with respect to the point that the appellants were trying to make with respect to the space, with respect to the firearms storage law, because the first district held that 9.68 to be valid and struck down Cincinnati's firearms storage law, which is essentially the same as Columbus's safe storage law. Looking at irreparable harm, an irreparable harm is one for the redress of which, after its occurrence, there could be no plain, adequate, and complete remedy at law. The city has promised to arrest, prosecute, incarcerate, and fine anyone who violates the law. And in fact, as my colleague on the other side has said, they've already utilized the law to prosecute someone. So indeed, this is irreparable harm, threatening prosecution, incarceration, that's irreparable harm. we look at the third element, harm to third parties, the court explained, harm to third parties from any injunction in this case is hard to determine. The city, of course, believes that enforcement of its ordinance will make Columbus safer. I have no evidence before me that might support or refute that view. That's in the opinion at page 28. Finally, the last element of whether the public interest will be served by the granting of the injunction, the court determined appropriately that it will be served because you are protecting citizens from prosecution under an unlawful ordinance. So I'd like to turn now to Article 1, Section 4 of the Ohio Constitution, which states the people have the right to bear arms for their defense and security. The appellants have cited Arnold versus Cleveland, and they've suggested in there that Arnold versus Cleveland upheld a Cleveland ordinance banning magazines. It did not. The Cleveland ordinance banned certain firearms with detachable magazines holding a certain capacity. The court upheld that. Arnold versus Cleveland did uphold that, but it said nothing about magazines.
There was a great dissent in that case that I think was very much on point, but we won't need to discuss it at this point.
Well, I agree. I agree with the dissent. I will also, but then after that, the General Assembly enacted 9.68, which basically said that law was invalid. And Cleveland, recognizing 9.68, repealed the ordinance. So that ordinance no longer exists. But Arnold is relevant, but not for the purpose of which the appellants claim, but rather for its statement and holding that Section 4, Article 1 of the Ohio Constitution confers upon the people the fundamental right to bear arms. Now, that was both in the syllabus and in the course of the opinion. The subsequent to Arnold, the Ohio Supreme Court has held that strict scrutiny applies when legislation infringes upon a constitutional right. The appellant, under the strict scrutiny analysis, has the obligation to show that the restriction is necessary to promote a compelling governmental interest. They have not shown that the restriction is necessary or that there's a compelling governmental interest.
Did Arnold espouse the theory of reasonableness as the standard?
Pardon me, can you say that again?
Didn't Arnold espouse the standard to be whether or not the ordinance reasonably accomplishes its purported purpose as opposed to strict scrutiny?
It did. But subsequent to Arnold, the Supreme Court has said when there's a fundamental right, we apply strict scrutiny. That's the Ohio Supreme Court.
What you're saying is their opinions are inconsistent in that regard, that the latest should prevail, even though it was the first was not specifically overruled. Is that in essence your argument?
Exactly, Your Honor. Thank you for synthesizing that for me. And secondly, Arnold also explained that in the protection of civil rights, such as the right to bear arms, the Ohio Constitution must provide at least as much protection as the United States Constitution. It explained, quote, in the areas of individual rights and civil liberties, the United States Constitution, where applicable to the states, provides a floor below which state court decisions may not fall. Since Arnold was decided, the United States Supreme Court has set forth that minimum in the Bruin case, which we cite in our brief. Bruin requires the government to demonstrate that the regulation imposed is consistent with the nation's historical tradition of firearms regulation. And so that is the government's burden. That is the city's burden to show that there's something in the history and tradition of firearms regulation that bans firearms magazines. They did not do so. Perhaps on remand, after this, again, this is a preliminary injunction. So the court recognized, the trial court recognized this is a preliminary injunction and there will be further evidence supplied. Perhaps they'll be able to do that. I think that's highly unlikely, especially in light of the testimony of the city's own expert witness, who said, who affirmed that 30-round magazines have been in usage for a quote, very, for a long time, transcript at 30. And he said they are very valid.
Probably not when the federal constitution, the right to bear arms amendment was put into effect. At that time, there were only muzzle loaders, weren't there?
At that
Mean,
time,
you start the historical analysis. At what point in history do we look to it? Don't we look to when the Second Amendment was first written?
we can look at two points. One, the First Amendment was first
Or,
written.
sorry.
No, you said it right. Or alternatively, when it was incorporated by reference under the 14th Amendment. In either place, there's a vast, the history of magazines goes back many years. Even to the founding, there were firearms that were not just muzzle loaders, but they had various, they could hold more than one, they could fire more than one round without without reloading. So
Oh,
any,
that's interesting to me. I didn't know
yeah,
that. And yeah.
there's a lot of very interesting,
Okay, I don't want to digress on that too much. I want to,
yeah. So,
I'll look it up in my history book. So go ahead.
yeah, and on remand, it'll be very interesting to present all that evidence to the court when we go to the final entry and on the, excuse me, hearing on the merits. And the other thing that was interesting that the their expert said was there are very valid reasons why someone might want to have a high capacity magazine. Now, I will say that at one time on Ohio history, that at one time the Ohio legislature did have a regulation with respect to owning firearms with detachable magazines, which could hold a certain number of rounds. But that was a regulation. It did not ban firearms and it did not ban magazines. That has since been repealed. And as to the reasonableness test in Arnold, yeah, I think that's been superseded by the Supreme Court subsequently. And I think also that the if we're going to look at reasonableness, I don't think they've even provided enough information for the court to find that it was reasonable. But that is something that can be further discussed on remand, on hearing on the merits. But again, I don't think that's the proper standard. And certainly 9.68 is the easy way. And it's a very obvious way since the Supreme Court has made it very clear that 9.68 controls and is valid. And that 9.68 addresses not only firearms capacities, magazines, but it also specifically refers to storage. So it's the whole thing. It's not just you don't do a selective analysis of the ordinance. The whole ordinance is invalid under the const under the not under 9.68. And once anyone has, and also when one party has standing in a case, that's enough for all the parties to have standing. So the argument that nine that somehow the amended complaint caused prejudice or of some sort. Rule 15 allows for amended for an amended complaint, and it's retroactive to the initial filing date. As I recall, there was no motion filed asking the court to allow further briefing or other action prior after John Doe after the amended complaint was filed. So I think that argument is waived.
Okay, can you address venue?
So venue, first of all,
Why is venue proper in Delaware, Ken?
two reasons. First of all, because the city of Columbus is in Delaware County.
Okay, I read that in Judge Gormley's opinion today, and I said, what? Because I think when I look at it, to me, traditionally, residence means where I live. A person lives someplace. The city may be located someplace. My home is located in Plain Township here, but I don't think my home has a residence. I don't understand that. But I know that's only one prong of your argument. Now, Judge Gormley would be right. I have trouble following his logic in that. And the concept that the law director has jurisdiction over parts of those seven precincts that are in Delaware County, that leaves me kind of wanting also, because that to me, again, I work in Delaware County sometimes. Does that make me a resident of Delaware County? I had trouble with that. So where you work and where a physical building is located or a city is located, a non-person, I have trouble with that argument. I'm more interested at this point in developing the argument as to John Doe 5. And I have not read his affidavit. What specifically does he aver in his affidavit relative to his residence?
Sure, give me one moment. I'll pull that up. He says that he is a resident of Columbus, Ohio, and my residence is located in Delaware County, Ohio. I've lived at this residence since before the passage of the Columbus Ordinance 3176-2022 in December 2022.
Okay, that answers my question.
Okay.
I was just going to just clarify. So the John Doe plaintiffs, they do reside in Delaware County, the portion that it still encompasses the city of Columbus.
John Doe 5 does. John Doe's 1 through 4 are in are in Franklin County, if I recall correctly.
Oh, okay.
And John Doe 5 does say that he regularly has minors in his residence where firearms are stored. He believes his storage methods are consistent with state laws, but does not know if they would be consistent with the Cleveland ordinance. So he needs to, so the so he does have jurisdiction. He does have standing to challenge the Cleveland ordinance, or excuse me,
Okay, I'm going to
Columbus ordinance.
stop you at this point because we're nearing the time. Judge, to make sure we have time for questions. Judge Baldwin, do you have anything at
I
this
do
point?
not. No, thank you.
Anything further at this point, Judge Montgomery?
No, thanks.
Can you clarify for me? I'm still confused about the Fairfield County case. The parties were, that was initiated by whom? The state of Ohio?
That's my understanding.
And against the city of Columbus.
Correct.
And the trial court found the ordinance constitutional. Is that correct?
I believe that is accurate.
And then, do I understand? And this is where I'm confused now. The plaintiff, the state of Ohio, I took it, then dismissed their appeal.
Yes. I don't know why. I
Was
was
that
obviously I was
what
not
was
involved.
what they appealed it? They had appealed it to us, but they dismissed their appeal. So, okay. So that would be res judicata right now in Fairfield County.
In Fairfield County, the trial court's order was reversed. It no longer exists.
The Fairfield County did not address the 9.68 code, but it held that the city ordinance was or was constitutional.
So
And did the who appealed? It would have been the state
So
would have
the
appealed.
state of Ohio appealed that case, and I misspoke. In that case, it was I'm not sure what the status is in of the trial court case. I don't know.
Okay, maybe you can help us, appellant, clarify that if you know. Go ahead. You've got about 2.5 minutes left.
Okay, very briefly, I just want to address the jurisdictional priority rule. I would just say that number one, that there is not a common issue. The 2019 case that the city filed against the city, trying to overturn 9.68, did not include the issue of the ordinance, and nor could it, because the ordinance did not exist at that time. So and so we are suing to have the Columbus ordinance overrule, determined to be unconstitutional and unlawful, also under 9.68. That could not have been part of the 2019 case that the City of Columbus brought, because it didn't exist. Second of all, there is no similarity of parties. My six clients have nothing to do with those other two cases. They're not parties, and no way are they parties to
Well,
that.
we'd know that if we could take their deposition, I suppose, but we're
Well,
not sure we would.
on remand, there's always a way to do that while maintaining the anonymity of my clients. So,
Okay.
but I would just say again, I would just like my closing. I'd like to say that again, my view, based on the preliminary injunction standard, it should be an easy case. The standard review is very differential. It requires the Court of Appeals to affirm the trial court's issuance of a preliminary injunction, unless the appellant shows an abuse of discretion. The balancing of the equities is clear. The Ohio Supreme Court has repeatedly held that 9.68 is valid, and therefore the ordinance is preempted by 9.68. Courts recognize that the threat of prosecution is irreparable harm. The public interest is served by protecting Columbus's residents' constitutional rights and legal rights under 9.68. And the lower court properly discounted any injuries that the city might incur from the late enforcement of its ordinance, because the Ohio Supreme Court has repeatedly said that the city may not enact such ordinances. We ask the court to affirm the trial court's issuance of a preliminary injunction and remand the case for further proceedings. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You had 8 seconds left, but we'll move on to appellee rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, it's interesting that Mr. Tyron did not address the simple fact that the only plaintiffs at the time of the preliminary injunction lived in Franklin County. Completely ignored that. That none of the plaintiffs at the time of the preliminary injunction hearing alleged the manner in which they store firearms. Completely ignored that. He attempted to save his case by adding somebody several weeks after the PI hearing was held. It is legal error on the trial court for this preliminary injunction. We're talking standard of review.
So your suggestion that we may split the baby on this issue. Part of the ordinance relative to storage should be reversed because there's no evidence of any of the John Does having storage issues or presenting that. But we do have at least one John Doe plaintiff who challenges the magazine section, and we would need to address that. Is that what I'm hearing you say? Indirectly.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. The problem, however, following that line all the way through is, again, the only person that actually resides in Delaware County wasn't added until after the preliminary injunction hearing. I do want to quickly address the notice of appeal. Your Honors, we appealed the preliminary injunction. That is sufficient to talk about the issues of the plaintiffs. That is sufficient to talk about standing. Because in order to get a preliminary injunction, the plaintiffs have to prove by clear and convincing evidence that they are likely to prevail on the merits, that they have a substantial likelihood of prevailing on the merits. These become legal questions, which means it's a de novo review. I did want to address.
I'm not convinced it's de novo review, but go ahead. The fact you say it doesn't mean that's the standard we are going to apply.
I also then, Your Honor, to address the question of Fairfield County, if I can
Yes,
go ahead and lay
please.
that out. The state of Ohio sued us in Fairfield County. They raised claims on these very ordinances saying they violated Article 1, Section 4, and they violated 968. The trial court in Fairfield County said, jurisdictional priority rule, I cannot hear the 968 claim. That's pending in Franklin County. I can, however, hear the Article 1, Section 4 claim as it relates to safe storage and large capacity. The Court of Appeals, or the trial court said, I'm applying Arnold, the city wins. The state of Ohio appealed that decision to the Fifth District. We briefed it. On the eve of argument, the state dismissed their appeal.
There's no chance of that happening in this case.
Oh, probably not, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. That clears up for me.
Yeah. And then to clarify one further point with that, Your Honor, the state did ultimately dismiss its lawsuit in Fairfield County. So there is nothing pending currently in Fairfield County.
Okay, we're at the point, but I want to still give, because there I know I've asked a lot of questions, and I want to ask my colleagues, or do you have any specific questions at this point?
I do not, thanks.
The thing that I'm wondering, it seems to me that with 9.68, it seems like the legislature intended to have consistent gun laws throughout the state of Ohio. How do you respond? Your colleague, representing the John Doe plaintiffs, referred to two recent Ohio Supreme Court cases that said 9.68 is constitutional. Can you speak on that? Because just looking at how I'm looking at this, I'm just wondering, and I understand the standing, and trying to look at the jurisdictional issues and how that whole thing came about. But at the end of the day, when you're looking, if we were to send this back and have a full-blown hearing on the merits, if you will, and not with that, how do you what's your thoughts? How do you get around the other Supreme Court cases that ruled that 9.68 is constitutional? And if the idea was to make sure you had uniform gun laws throughout the state, so somebody isn't driving from Licking County to Columbus, where it's legal in Licking and illegal in Columbus, or people traveling through Interstate 70. I mean, how do you get around the Supreme Court cases? Is there a way to distinguish what your colleague had said? I mean, if you've got two that have said 9.68 is constitutional, how do you get around that?
Very simple, Your Honor. First off, the last decision out of the Ohio Supreme Court on 968 was from 2010, the Cleveland case. The 2017 case that the plaintiff is talking about deals with red light cameras. And the 2017 case dealing with red light cameras actually changed the legal standard. So in Cleveland in 2010, the court said, we're going to take a look at an entire body of law for purposes of is it a general law under Ohio law? In 2017, in the Dayton red light camera case, the court said, wait a minute, that's not the way we actually deal with home rule. When we're dealing with home rule, we take a look at the very specific challenge. So the court has said, for example, in trans fats in towing, that the General Assembly does not have the ability to say, we want uniform laws across the board. I was just in the Ohio Supreme Court a couple of months ago
Can you
on behalf.
need to summarize it quickly? I mean, finishing your answer, but yeah.
Very quickly, Your Honor, was in the Supreme Court within the last couple of months arguing the state tobacco preemption, where the General Assembly said, we want uniform tobacco laws across the state. Both the Franklin County Common Pleas Court and the 10th District Court said that's unconstitutional. We'll have a ruling by the from the Ohio Supreme Court by end of year on that. It's no different to say that than it is to say uniform towing laws or anything else where the court has found those state laws unconstitutional. So by applying the 2017 case, Cleveland is questionable, and that's why the Franklin County Common Pleas Court ended up coming out the way it did. Thank you, Your Honors. We ask that this opinion be reversed.
All right. Thank you, counsel. The matter will be taken under advisement. You'll be advised in writing once we have reached our decision. My guess is you'll probably see it before the Supreme Court announcement in the recent case you talked about, but who knows? And I've decided if, in fact, and we reverse this case, I think the three of us are going to recommend that Judge Gormley go back to hear this in the trial court. So, okay. Thank you, counsel, for your appearances and arguments today. The matter is deemed submitted. With that, that will conclude oral argument, and you're free to leave. To my colleagues, we have 9 other cases we are conferencing today. And I'm recommending we join our post-conference sit in about 5-10 minutes.
Sounds good.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.